aggressive. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Welcome, welcome everyone. This is Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I am the Eagles Superfan. I am also here tonight with Tim, our Falcons Superfan, and Jimmy, our Panthers Superfan. Tim, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sitting out in the car, the best recording studio in the South.
Awesome. Gotta love podcasts. Full professional right here. That is awesome. I'm glad it works for you. Jimmy, how you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Tonight we're here to kind of recap week 2 of the preseason. We're going to talk about all the games that have happened so far. We know tomorrow we have the Bengals and the Bucks game. We're not going to be able to get to that, obviously. None of us have seen it yet. But we'll try to cover all the other games, including the 2 games that are going on right now while we're recording, which is the San Francisco-Dallas game and the St. Louis-Tennessee game. Those games are happening right now. It is Sunday evening as we do this. This podcast will be out Monday morning, and we will do our best to at least talk about the starters from those games. Right off the bat, sad day. What the worst thing we'd ever want to see in preseason is injuries. Just want to shout out, so sad for Packers fans, Jordy Nelson going down, possibly an ACL tear for the whole season would be a real shame. And then Pouncey, we'll get to this game eventually, but breaking his ankle and losing 6 weeks for the Steelers. Just in one game, 2 great players going down, really a shame. Let's kind of go around the horn, guys, and talk about these different games that have already started. We're going to kind of move chronologically from the first games were on Thursday to Friday to all the games that were yesterday on Saturday. So to kick it all off, first let's go with Tim. If you could tell us a little bit about what did you see in the Bills-Browns game? What was interesting in that game for you?
There was a ton of bad offense, and not surprising. I mean, it's the Bills and the Browns. Neither team really has a quarterback, and, that's the biggest takeaway from this game. Is, the second half was really E.J. Manuel against Johnny Manziel. And, based off what I was watching, the time for both of those guys may be right now. The Bills tried to get things going with Tyrod Taylor, and he looked good when he was moving. But, whenever it came time for him to throw the ball, it was, incomplete passes and just not looking good. And for the Browns, McCown looked awful, throwing interceptions on the first 2 drives that he had. And, I mean, the Bills' secondary is not that great. Their defensive line is phenomenal. So, it should have matched up well against the Browns' offensive line, which is one of the better units in the league. Just bad from McCown. And, Manziel was tolerable, and E.J. Manuel was tolerable. Manuel, leading the Bills down the field at the end of the game for, the touchdown and then the 2-point conversion to win it. Sloppy game on both sides, and happy I'm not the fan for either one of those teams, to be completely honest, because it does not look like a whole lot of fun there.
How did that Bills defensive line look? Does it look as mean as we all expect it to look, or did you not be able to see it this early in the preseason?
I mean, it's hard for me to comment as the Falcons super fan because I don't know what a defensive line is supposed to look like. They were disruptive. They were back there. They look good, to be completely honest. And, I want to say that even Mario Williams is one of the interceptions. I could be completely wrong on that. Drop it back into coverage and doing a little bit of that zone defense that, we learned from the Steelers in the 90s. Overall, I think Buffalo looked better, and they deserve the win. But both offenses were struggling. But, do keep in mind that Buffalo was down. All of their running backs that are anticipated to make the opening day roster and, a lot of their wide receivers didn't play either. So that could also play into it. And, for all we know that, if both teams are at full health, then, the Bills could have just manhandled the Browns in this.
Well. Yeah, I'm just fascinated through these preseason, right, guys? It seems that I'm seeing the most starters seated than I remember. And it may be that I'm just misremembering preseasons of the past, but it seems that a large amount of people are not playing. And then also the people that are playing, the starters are playing a much shorter time than I remember in the past. For game 2, I was used to game 1 was a quarter, game 2 was a half, game 3 was a little more than a half. And now we're seeing game 1 was maybe a series. Game 2 is definitely not even a quarter for the starters. I'm curious if this is just a new era. Are we seeing people afraid of the injuries? What exactly that is? Are we seeing people be seated in preseason when they only have a slight injury, like no risk whatsoever? If you're not feeling 100%, you don't go on the field. for another team that's dealing with injuries already, the Redskins. How did that seem, Jimmy? You watched the Redskins and the Lions game. How did that game look for you?
Real quick before we go to the Skins, the Bills and Browns, I just don't see them, either of them, going being better than 8-8. I think they're identical teams. I'm looking at the stat line for Buffalo, and they picked Jerry Hughes and Darius both picked up a sack each. I think do you guys think they're going to be better than 8-8, either of them?
I don't know. I definitely not the Browns. The Bills, I don't know. I don't think so. I believe in defense. I think Rex Ryan could do things special there, especially if he can get an offense that's running. I don't think it's going to happen this year. If I had to choose one of those teams that is going to do better, I think it would be the Bills.
Yeah, and I'd agree with Mark. You know, if I'm picking one of those two teams to do something, it's going to be the Bills, and it's going to be based on that defense alone. But you've got to figure out the quarterback position because – you know, McCoy can't carry the ball 500 times this season. He's just not going to be able to do that. And, you know, they do have a couple weapons on the outside with Sammy Watkins, and Robert Woods isn't horrendous, but if no one can get them the ball, then they don't even matter. So, you know, they've got to figure out the quarterback position if they're going to go more than 8-8. And, you know, the Bills do have, you know, a difficult division that they're playing in. Miami looks good. And, you know, New England is always looking good, even if they're not without, you know, or if they are without Tom Brady for, you know, extended period of time. You know, the Jets are the Jets. I don't think that that's going to be anything to worry about. I think they're going to be the basement in that division. But, you know, we're definitely going to see. I don't feel good for either team.
No, not at all. But, yeah, the Redskins and the Lions game, I actually caught a decent amount of this game. I live in Virginia, so everyone here in Virginia – are all Redskins fans, and watching RG3 run the offense, I don't know what plays Jay Gruden's calling. I don't know if you guys saw this game, but it seems like the plays he's calling for RG3 are set up for him to stay in the pocket, take a hit, throw the ball. When he calls the play, when he's calling the offensive plays for Captain Kirk and Colt McCoy, he's calling rolling screens, pocket moving. The offensive line got bullied when RG3 was out there. I watched the game. I did some research. RG3 got sacked 3 times. He dropped back 8 times. Out of the 8 times, he got hit 6 of the 8 times. I don't know if the team wants to play for RG3. The offensive line, Brandon Scherff, and what the heck's their left tackle? What's his name?
Not important.
Yep. But anyways, but he, both of them getting bull rushed like they've never played a line before. It's just, I don't know if the team wants to play for RG3. When Kirk runs the offense, they're a different group up there. When Colts run it, they're a different group. I would love to see RG3 get to a team like Houston, get him in his home state, get him out of Washington. I just think it's bad news for Washington this season. I think this is RG3's last year, Gruden's last year. I think they're going to be moving on. Some positive notes for the Redskins. I thought Matt Jones and Alfred Morris, that's going to be a very good tandem backs. But outside of that, the Redskins, it's going to be a long season. Detroit looked like Detroit. I think they're going to be very balanced this year. I really like what Abdullah and Zach Zenner is bringing to the team. Those are two backs, and Joey Bell hasn't even been in on the field yet. I think they're going to be much more balanced offense. They're not going to be the Pass City Lions. And I think the defense is still the question in Detroit. But I think signs are pointing up for Detroit and a long season for Washington.
Yeah, I completely agree. In our division, I think that is the bottom of our division. I mean, the ultimate kind of metaphor, the perfect analogy, is that Deshaun Jackson this offseason was running and hurt himself in practice, not because he got hit by another player, not because he fell weird on his knee. He got hurt because he ran into a sled, was too close to the edge of the field. And that's the Redskins. You know what I mean? It's like, that's how poorly run that organization is, that somebody puts something that could actually really injure a player right next to the practice field, and you lose your best offensive weapon because of stupid, like, you know, like the office manager isn't doing his job, or whatever you want to call that, whoever handles the equipment on the field. Like, you can't have that. I mean, that would be, Chip Kelly would fire half his staff if that kind of crap happened in our game. And it's just that kind of thing that's really going to get them wrong. I've never seen a rift between a quarterback and a coach that they had last year, where the coach would go into the post-game shows and actually tell you what the quarterback did wrong, play for play, what he was doing, saying things as rude as he's not even able to read both sides of the field, or he read the wrong side of the field, not even knowing the playbook that, you know, that poorly. Ugh, just really, it's, yeah, I think the Skins are in for trouble. And I'm not too worried about them. I give respect to the Giants. I'm worried about them. And Dallas, obviously, they took the division as the big division, is the big, you know, player in the NFC East. But the Skins, yeah, they could be the top pick in the draft. I mean, they could be the, you know, as Pod likes to say.
With the first pick in the NFL draft.
The Washington Redskins. All right, so guys.
I just saw a mock draft with they just took the Las Vegas odds to win the Super Bowl, and they had Washington picking third in the draft, and they had him selecting Cardale Jones. And I just started laughing as soon as I saw that, but yeah, I think Washington will be the top of the draft.
That's fascinating. Moving on to our next game, we have Seattle and Kansas City. I watched this game, really, really interesting. Two powerhouse defenses. They were getting tackles for losses on both sides, just back and forth. I would say Seattle looked more dominant in that sense. They swarm like a way that I don't see many other teams do. Screen passes. They would call a screen pass, and there would be several dudes like already on the dude who was going to catch the screen, and then all the blockers were like already on the ground. Just really incredible. Wilson had a nice scramble. Kerry Williams, who was an ex-Eagle, I was always watching for him because I think he's really going to be the weak point in that defense, and especially that Legion of Boom, the backfield, the secondary. He gave up a crucial third down where Alex Smith went down and got a touchdown. This was down in the red zone. I think they're going to find Kerry Williams out of position a lot and doing what he's supposed to do. It's going to be interesting to watch a piece like that go into that amazing defense and see if it really messes them up. They were really stalling a lot, the Seattle offense, until their one big free agent came along, Graham, and they had an amazing drive where it was basically just like Graham, 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 three long passes. I think we're going to see more and more of that in Seattle. All year, I think it's going to be a nightmare for those the NFC West teams. Kansas City fumbled the opening kickoff. That's always, for me, I would have been really freaked out if it was my team. I hate stuff like that. I don't want to see any kind of crap like that. I don't know if that's their main kickoff for Turner, but he just, you know, the first kick is out of his hands. Oof, ugly. Alex looked Alex-esque. He threw a really ugly pick six, which, to be honest, was the only way Seattle was getting on the field because Kansas City's defense was playing so well, getting on the scoreboard because Kansas City was playing so well on defense. But still, it was a bad interception. I don't know what Alex was doing. He threw it right to a linebacker who just easily took it in. So in the end, it's just the kind of game you'd expect. It's two teams whose defenses are really revved up and ready to play, and their offenses are trying to find each other. I think that the Kansas City offense is going to get on track a little slower than the Seattle offense. I think Russell Wilson and Graham alone are just weapons that Kansas City doesn't have. Do you guys have any thoughts on this game?
Kansas City running back Sharkhandrick West, he's been lighting up the first two games for those fantasy football. I'm going to add him to playing deep dynasty leagues. I'm going to add him to my team. Maybe he might take over the role of Ronald Davis, Charles Ginnold, but that's just something I saw of Kansas City. I don't like Alex Smith. He's Alex Smith, but that's the only thing I have to add for that game.
Nice. And Tim, as we get on to your actual game for your team, Falcons-Jets, this was Friday night. What did you think? How did the game look? How did your team look?
Ignore the final score. It doesn't matter. The Falcons won this game. When both teams had their first team in, it was complete dominance by the Falcons. Matt Ryan looks fantastic, by the way. I don't know if you guys are paying attention, but he's thrown one incompletion this preseason, and it was him rolling out of the pocket. There was nothing there, so he threw it away out of the back of the end zone. I mean, it's just he's playing at a different level right now. I think he's like 12 of 13 for like 170 yards and two touchdowns. I know that's a small sample size, but he's legitimately playing out of his mind. He's spreading the ball around extremely well, including like a 60-yard pass that was just perfectly placed to the fullback on Friday night. And, he just looks really, really good, especially considering he has no run game right now. I know in my week two preview, I said that, you know, I want to see who's getting the starting job between Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Again, both of them sat out with hamstring injuries. Anthon Smith out again with hamstring injury. So it was Teron Ward, who undrafted rookie free agent. He's not going to make the team. I'm sorry, man. You know, you tried hard in camp. You did a good job in camp. But as soon as we got into preseason games, he's just overmatched. But, you know, as a whole, I mean, the offense looks fantastic, as you would expect. And at wide receiver, Leonard Hankerson is coming along really well. And he made Antonio Cromartie look foolish on his 2-yard touchdown. Roddy White didn't play, something to keep in mind for fantasy players. He is going to have elbow surgery or some sort of operation. They haven't said specifically what it's going to be. They said he should be back for week one, but I do have my doubts with him being in his 30s and getting older and constantly injured these days. Might be worth skipping over and looking at Hankerson instead. From the Jets side, Chris Ivory looked really, really good in the second, quarter and on. He was getting some runs, but do keep in mind that was against the Falcons' second team, which looks like it was the Falcons' first team last year. The defense for the Falcons just looks a lot better. Revis kept Julio from doing anything crazy, but Julio did get him, on a penalty in the end zone to extend a drive on the one where Matt Ryan went to Hankerson. All in all, it's been an interesting preseason for us. We have no idea what we're doing with the offensive line. It still doesn't look like it's gelling. As we continue, we'll see what happens. And, a couple highlights for the Jets, their first round pick. He looked really, really good and got a free run on TJ Yates for a safety in the end zone. Just a missed opportunity, from the offensive line and the fullback in the backfield. But he didn't mess up on it at all. He was on TJ Yates in half a second and just ruined him. But, all in all, it was a good game, for the first half anyways. Second half was all Jets. And, I don't know if you guys saw any of that or have any comments.
The fullback play you just humbly mentioned really blew me away. Like, I'm watching you, Tim, because we play you guys week one. So yours was the first preseason game. I went back and was like, all right, let's check this out. Let's see where they're at. And I have to say, you guys looked very impressive. I was very impressed with Ryan and especially that throw. Like I said, Tim just humbly let this say, this throw to the fullback. But the fullback comes out on this, like, shallow crosser. And the linebacker is kind of caught where he's about to turn and he's – And in Madden, where you're throwing against a weak linebacker and if that was Patrick Willis, like, I couldn't even throw this ball. It would be intercepted in a second. Because I know that guy's a chump, I'm just going to throw it right on the other side of him. And he caught that ball and turned up field. And what was it, a 50-yard play, 60-yard play? How long did the fullback go?
60 yards.
60 yards with a fullback? I mean – Heath Evans just got, like, the biggest boner. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on here. But I don't know if you guys know this about Heath Evans, where he just, like, argues that fullbacks are, like, the coolest thing in football and no tough teams don't have fullbacks. That's the best fullback play I've seen in a long time. And the pass was – it was beautiful. It was perfect by Matt Ryan. I'm very excited to play you guys. I think it'll be a great game week one. Moving on, Jimmy, to your game, Panthers-Dolphins. How did you guys look? How is everything going now that you've lost Kelvin Benjamin? Where's the offense at? How did you feel?
I will start on the positive notes and before I go on to my rant. The Miami Dolphins looked very good. All three drives that Tannehill and they went 14-0 very easily. They moved the ball with these. I thought Tannehill looked very good. He was in sync with all his different receivers and running backs. Every time Carolina got on the offense, they were throwing out. Carolina's defense was out there for a long time. I think at one point after the first quarter, we only had four or five minutes of time of possession. The rest were Miami. But Tannehill, that's a team to watch. Tannehill looked really in sync with all his different weapons, whether it's Lamar Miller, out of the backfield. He looked really good with Jarvis Landry, Matthews. They only have Devontae Parker out there. But another name I thought was sneaky good was Damien Williams. He was a scat back out of the backfield. And there were several times it was third and long, and Damien Williams would just drop right in there, right in front of Luke Kuechly, pick up the 6-7 yards that they needed. It was pretty bad. And once the Dolphins went up 14-0, Carolina tried to press, get something offensively. We hadn't gotten the first down yet in that game. At that point in the game, Cam's first look as Greg Olsen. Ball's picked off. It should have been a pick six. Fortunately, the Dolphins defender fumbled it, and right as he's going to the end zone, it was ruled a touchback. But essentially, it would have been 21-0 in the second quarter. It was a complete disaster for Carolina. It's Greg Olsen and no one else. And this is what we had last year in Carolina. It was Greg Olsen and the same exact wide receiver core. So I don't know if I'm overreacting. You guys tell me if I'm overreacting. But Carolina is going to be god-awful. Completely awful. Greg Olsen is going to be leading the team in receiving yards again. Devin Funchess was not playing this game, but if he is anything to what Kelvin Benjamin was last year, then we'll have the same exact offense as we did last year. Jonathan Stewart didn't really get much going in the game. He didn't get many touches. He dropped one screen pass. One highlight, I thought Cameron Artis Payne looks very energetic. I thought he looked is going to be a great change of pace. And when Jonathan Stewart gets hurt, Cameron Artis Payne might be a good little play right there. Outside of that, my biggest concern coming into the season was the offensive line. And I thought the offensive line played pretty decent against the Miami Dolphins defense. Cam had plenty of time to throw. There are a couple of times he threw a good ball and Corey Brown completely drops it. Or Cam Newton throws the ball 10 feet over Corey Brown's head. He targeted Corey Brown a lot, which I'm happy. I think that's our best player out there receiving balls. After the first string offense went out, Derek Anderson came in and connected with Jared Boykin several times. Derek Anderson, whatever. On the defensive side, we lose Frank Alexander for the year, torn ACL. We didn't play with him a lot last – I mean, we played with him 12 of the games last year. He was suspended 4 games, but he's the projected starter across from Charles Johnson. Now it's Coney Ealy and Mario Addison. Star Lotulelei still hurt. Josh Norman, I can't stand this guy. He makes a couple of good plays, and he gets completely shook up for a touchdown with Damian Williams. It's not looking good. One highlight on defense, I thought Shaq Thompson made a great play against Jordan Cameron, defending the touchdown pass. So I think Shaq and A.J. Klein will be splitting time in the third linebacker spot. But this team, I may be overreacting, but this team reminds me of a team that is going to lose the offensive coach or possibly the head coach by the end of the season. This is not shaping up. Granted, it is the second preseason game, but this is a complete disaster for Carolina this week. It was terrible.
I wonder if you guys can trade for a receiver or pick some receivers up in the waiver wire. You know, there's going to be a lot of cuts coming. I think there are some solutions. You know, I think you guys can get a little better. I don't know if you're going to replace Kelvin. Obviously, he's an incredible player. But, yeah, man, I'm sorry. I just hearing you say all that makes me sad. I'm sorry, man. That is rough.
I'm sure Tim is enjoying it.
Yes, exactly. Tim, are you smiling over there? How do you feel about all this?
No, I mean, as the game was going on, like, I was on Twitter, and I could just see, you know, Jimmy's tweets just getting more and more depressing as it goes on. And you never like to see teams fall apart to injury. That's what's happened to the Falcons the past 2 years, is it's just been brutal injury after brutal injury. And it's not fun. Like, you know, I mean, winning's great. If we go into Carolina and we win, that's awesome. But I don't want to win because half of their team is decimated. I want to win because we're a better team. You know, and right now, like, I feel really bad. And, and then seeing today that the NFL is reporting that Reggie Wayne met with the Patriots. No, Reggie Wayne needs to be meeting with the Panthers. He does. There's a definite need for somebody there. And, you know, I want the games to be more competitive. I do want the 2 wins. I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, like, I'd rather us get wins legitimately. And, you know, I mean, if you guys need to call in, you know, some veterans who can still play, then do it. But, I mean, I don't understand why New England needs Reggie Wayne. There's teams that need him more, including, I mean, the Packers right now. They're going to need something. So, you know, I mean, it's frustrating to see, you know, teams get blown apart by injuries. But, I mean, that's how it goes, especially this preseason. It seems like there's been more than in years past. And, you know, maybe the arguments to shorten the preseason are going to actually, you know, come back up again.
Yeah.
There was a point in the game where the Carolina did get on the goal line as a short offensive stand. They hand the ball off. This is when both first teams are in the game. Hand the ball off 2 times to Mike Tolbert. He gets stuffed. once the camera started came in on his pain, I thought that I was going to get stuff. And the last time on fourth down, they call play action, and Cam rolls out and dives towards the sideline, come up short of goal. But if it was regular season, I think they would have called a QB draw, some sort of play where Cam jumps over the line. That was probably a touchdown, but outside of that, our best offensive player was Graham Gano.
He's not even on offense, he's special teams.
thanks.
just Jordy Nelson, I feel that way really with the NFC, just having Jordy Nelson and hurt that team. I mean, that is one of the teams to aspire to beat, and to see them get weakened before they even really get out the gate. I know the Packers will find people to throw the ball to. They'll be all right, but Jordy Nelson is an incredible player, and it just, I'd rather, like you said, I'd rather beat the good teams when they're full strength than, beat them when they have one hand tied behind their back. The Baltimore-Philly game was amazing. I mean, I don't mean to get too cocky too fast, but Philly has already just now in the preseason just completely dismantled two teams. Like, not even close to being a competition. We're up by two or three scores before the other team even knows what the hell is going on. We were beating Baltimore 30-0 at the end of the third quarter. So all of our first, second, and third stringers, we just dominated them at all levels. And then fourth quarter, finally, they were able to put up like 17 points in the fourth quarter. And we put up another like 13. But regardless, we just destroyed them. Flacco was really off in his two opening drives. He threw two interceptions, both really ill-advised passes. What's awesome for us is, so we have a new backfield. There were four people in our typical secondary, and we replaced three of them. All three of them were involved in interceptions. Nolan Carroll, our new corner, tipped the ball to Walter Thurmond, our new safety, who picked the first pass off in the end zone. It was a deep, like, 60-yard pass that was just underthrown, really. I think if it had been a little further out, it would have had a chance at completion, but the guy was right on him. Nolan Carroll was right on the kid's hip and just pushed the ball up, popped it like tip drill style right back to the safety, and boom, we had the interception. He ran it back about 35 yards. Byron Maxwell, the ball was just thrown high. Flacco threw into a zone. He threw the ball too high. Byron was sitting there waiting for it, took it, also a nice return. The big controversy of the game was Suss taking a cheap shot at Bradford's legs. They ran a read option play, and he clearly handed the ball off, and Suggs, either way afterwards, even though it was clear Bradford didn't have the ball, just dove into his knees. And that's great for us because it tests those rubber band knees. They did fine. Bradford got up. They didn't pull from the game. He kept playing and got a touchdown. But they threw the flag, and it was clearly a 15-yard penalty. Suggs is trying to act like that he's allowed to do that, but he's not. If he's on any play, if you hand the ball off, the quarterback can then not be hit below the knees. That's just a standard thing. Really ridiculous, an ugly, ugly play. And that was the big thing I got from the game, was just the Ravens, they had practiced in Philly all week. So I think they clearly knew they were just getting their asses kicked, because we were just, you can even read the beat writers for the Baltimore wrote a lot about this week, that we were just able to move the ball at will on them, and they had no answer for our offense. And then they didn't have a single corner who could cover Jordan Matthews. There's nothing even close. And then them against us, we were stopping them like three and outs left and right. And then we got to the real game, and obviously the same thing happened. I think we're just a better team. We're better coached. We are tighter together right now. We just were kicking their ass. And so they started to play cheap, which is just so disgusting and just like dirty. Get out of my face. Just like, go have fun being an inferior team this year. Gross. Just totally disgusting. And Forsett ran a little better on us than I think he should have. I love the Ravens. In this preseason, you get to hear these like stupid local commentators. The Ravens commentator, they called defensive holding, and he literally said, "I didn't even know you could have holding on defense." It's like, what the hell did you get to go on air and talk about football live, and you don't know what defensive holding is? I would just like reach through the TV and strangle the dude. Unbelievable. That's when a receiver has passed 5 yards and he's touched by any player. If he's just touched, it's defensive holding. Regard. Never mind. Did you guys see any of this game? Any thoughts? There was a lot of penalties on the Ravens, they were saying, but the big reason for that, like I said, is because they were playing cheap. There were penalties left and right because, if they didn't hold, our players would have been even more wide open than they were. Did anybody see any parts of this game? Any thoughts? How high on my horse am I? Should I get off this horse before I'm super confident?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it towards the end. You know, something that I do want to compliment the Ravens on, their backup quarterback, Bryn Renner, looks really, really good. And he has in both preseason games. You know, I think he's leading the team in touchdowns right now. And, I mean, yeah, a lot of his passes are just outlet passes and, you know, hitting the tight end. But legitimately, we've seen, you know, some of the, quote, superstar quarterbacks, Tom Brady, I'm looking at you, just do that and win Super Bowls. Legitimately, like, I feel like if this kid doesn't stick here in Baltimore, then he's got a future with one of the other teams that needs a quarterback or at least a backup quarterback. You know, I'm looking at, you know, Cleveland, I'm looking at Buffalo. I mean, heck, I'm looking at Atlanta for a backup position. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing that kid come into town. He's better than TJ Yates and Sean Renfrey. You know, I mean, he's looked really, really good. And I know it's against, you know, inferior players and, you know, depth players, that sort of thing. But you also do have to keep in mind that he's also playing with depth players and he's making some of these wide receivers and tight ends look pretty good out there and actually putting, you know, good touch on the ball, that sort of thing. So, you know, something for Ravens fans to look at, you know, if they decide to keep him and Flacco goes down, you know, your season may not be completely doomed. Your backup quarterback actually looks pretty good. And Steve Smith looks amazing as always. He's filthy. And, I mean, he's an amazing wonder. He does not need to retire after this year. He's fantastic.
How would you think about that Saints-Pats game? Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Mark. Outside of Murray, Matthews, and Sproles, do you guys have room to keep Kenyon Barner? I mean, he returned another punt. This is the second game in a row, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, he returned two punts in a row. Now, long punts, one was like a 92-yarder, and this one was like a 60 or 70-yarder. Both times he's displaying great vision and like really moving well as he did it. I think he will make this team. I think he makes this team as the punt returner so that Sproles only has to do it on special plays. And this is something the Eagles have done in the past. They would bring Westbrook in or D-Jax in, DeSean Jackson, when they needed a certain really good, you know, the miracle at the Meadowlands too, where D-Jax ran the ball back at the very, you know, when time ran out against the Giants. I see Sproles as that kind of guy. They bring in just for the really big, important return, and they need somebody that they can risk injury with, and I think it's Barner. So, yeah, I think they're going to keep four. And I think the reason they can do that is I think that they're basically going to think of Sproles as like a hybrid between the wide receiver and the running back. And so they probably will only keep like five wide receivers and he'll be the extra, if that makes sense. Unfortunately, we have a guy even behind that, Mostert, who's looking – I don't know if I'm saying that name right, by the way. But he looks awesome. He's really, really fast. And for a kid who's got like an amazing 40 time and he was a track star, he's pretty tough. He catches the ball well, and he seems to break some tackles. So we right now have five good running backs, and I think Barner makes the team because, I mean, who returns punt returns in two back-to-back games? It's pretty remarkable. Let's go on up for Saints-Pats. Tim, what did you think of that game?
I thought as a whole it was pretty sloppy. There were a ton of penalties, and you know, talking with Chase, who's the Saints super fan, he said that it was actually half the penalties that they had the week before. I didn't watch it the week before, and you know, I'm just going to be conditioned to think that the Saints look sloppy, to be completely honest. Drew Brees looked great. You know, to comment on a couple bright things, he looked amazing, and you know, he would have had, you know, more touchdowns if his wide receivers could actually hold on to the ball. One of them was stripped in the end zone for an incompletion, but he did get a good one to Cooks. Cooks looks fantastic, and you know, he's fully healed off of, you know, his injury from last year, and he looks really fast and scary. And I mean, that's what they need, because losing Jimmy Graham, you know, I marked it down as, you know, we're at least going to win one out of the two games because Jimmy Graham was the only thing that we couldn't stop. And I feel good about, you know, Desmond Trufant as a corner for us. But, I mean, Trufant's going to have his hands full with Cooks because, you know, both guys are insanely fast. But I think Cooks might have the jump on him just a little bit. And, I mean, he was catching balls that were just coming over his shoulder. And he looked like a professional wide receiver finally. Last year I didn't see it, but, you know, he was a rookie. This year, the year after, I mean, he does look strong. He looks fast. He looks good. You know, on the defensive side, you know, the Saints came in and, you know, they made Tom Brady look terrible. But, you know, Garoppolo, when he came in, he had a good game. You know, again, you know, it was against the second team for the Saints, and the Saints defense is not even good to begin with. But Chase also did mention that they were down their entire starting secondary. So that's something else to keep in mind. But I really don't know. And, you know, looking at the Patriots, you know, their offensive line wasn't great. You know, their receivers looked okay, but, you know, it was the same thing that, you know, Renner was doing for the Ravens and then Tom Brady does all the time. Garoppolo's just making, you know, short throws for completions and just chunk, chunk, chunk down the field. And same thing with LeGarrette Blount. You know, he looked all right. You know, the Patriots have a couple smaller scat back type running backs that look pretty good. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Belichick even thinks, you know, they want to keep here. A lot going on in this game, to be honest, because there's a lot of moving parts and, you know, trying to figure out who's going to fill in for who. But, you know, I think that they definitely do need the two more games to find out, you know, where things are going to land.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see both of those teams this year. I think both of them have lost significant players in this offseason, and I'm just curious, you know, they're both teams I respect, and I, you know, I think they have great coaches, great quarterbacks. Can they be competitive, or is this going to be a major step back from last year? For the Saints, even a further step back, which I know they had a rough season last year with some injuries. How did you feel about the Giants-Jags game, Jimmy? How did that game look to you?
From the Giants' perspective, Eli missed Odell Beckham several times. I think that'll be fixed. I'm actually pretty high on the Giants this year. I think that offense is pretty has the potential to be pretty explosive. Just watching the I didn't watch this game. I just caught the highlights that showed Eli missing Odell Beckham several times, but Odell Beckham was open. So I think it's just a matter of time getting synced up. I saw James Jones and Dwayne Harris also making some plays out there, and with Victor Cruz, who did not play in this game, but with him coming back, they're saying he's faster than he was before. Ruben Randall's still there. I think they got five decent receivers there. That's pretty underrated. And when you start talking about the best receiver corps in the league, on the other side of the ball for the Giants, they're racking up injuries just like the rest of the league. John Beeson goes down. They lose their safety, Bennett Jackson, torn ACL, who they're counting on. Their linebackers are very shaky. I don't think JPP played in this game. I don't think he's yet to touch the field. So I think their defense is a big question mark, and that's usually the other way around. And it's not the typical Giants defense I think people are used to in years past. So that'll be something to watch as the year goes on. But it might be time to really shake things up defensively for New York. For the Jaguars, I thought Blake Bortles played pretty well for his second preseason game of the year. He's finding his weapons. There was a couple times they found Allen Robinson in open. Looked like they're going to be a dangerous group. T.J. Yeldon and Julius Thomas did not play. But I think Jacksonville is another team that's on the rise slowly, but they got some good things going on down there. And I don't know if you all saw this on the highlights. Like I said, that's all I caught. Odell Beckham goes up on the side for a pass. He's double teamed, and the safety comes in and hits him pretty good. And then later in the game, he's overthrown, and then ODB finds that same safety and gets a cheap shot on him. And now that this is Odell Beckham's second year in the league, I'm curious if teams will – I mean, they're obviously focusing on him, but I wonder if he's short-tempered, wonder if they can get in his head, especially get some players like Revis or Sherman who talks that shit to him. I'm wondering if he might get a little shaken up mentally. It'd be interesting to see when he plays the top corner on every team week out, if he can withstand mentally. He's got the physical talent, so I wonder if he's still a little immature and he might have some flaws on that side.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know either. I'm excited to see if he develops, but I see the potential as well. Moving on to the Oakland-Minnesota game, Monty, our super fan for the Raiders, wrote in with some fun stuff. He talked about that be ready for the AC/DC puns. They're coming. He says, obviously, Amari Cooper, Derek Carr, this connection. We're going to hear a lot of Hell's Bells played at every Raiders game, and they're hoping this is going to be great. I guess they hit a 40-yarder that Monty was really, really excited about and hopes this is going to be like the future for them. Hello. He says, really needs to get healthy and back on the field. Trent Richardson is not looking good. Their defense is not getting sacks, but they're doing all right against the run. The secondary is very young and is not looking good at all. He's pretty much ready. Monty says he may be ready to call DJ Hayden a bust. And he asks a really good question as we're looking at a Oakland-Minnesota game. Who do you guys think is better, Derek Carr or Teddy Bridgewater? If you guys had to have one of those guys as your quarterback on your team, Tim, who would you go with?
I'm going to take Derek Carr. And, you know, it may not be the fan consensus pick right there. I feel like most of the fans would say Bridgewater because I feel like he's more of the household name. But I feel like when it comes down to arms and legs, Derek Carr can make all of the throws and make better plays, whereas, you know, Bridgewater may have a better head on his shoulders, you know, and is the, quote, field general, as we hear, you know, them say every single time he's on national, you know, TV, and they were saying it, you know, during the Hall of Fame game, like, oh, yeah, this guy's such a field general, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, yeah, but I'm not impressed. You know, Derek Carr, like, I feel like he can legitimately go out there and torch somebody. It's just he's not had the weapons. And, you know, having Amari Cooper out there, Amari Cooper, I mean, if he can become, you know, 80% of a Julio Jones or Dez Bryant, then, you know, they're going to have something out there in Oakland that people should be afraid of. And, you know, I feel like Carr's not afraid to stand in there and just, you know, gun it. And, you know, part of that could be that, you know, he learned watching his older brother just fail, that he realizes that he's only going to fail if he lets it into his own head to just go out there and sling it and just see what happens. But I don't know. I kind of like the swagger that Derek Carr carries a little bit better, you know, and you don't see him, you know, pop up in the media or anything like that. He's, you know, a little under the radar. And I kind of like that in a quarterback.
What do you think, Jimmy? Would you go the same way? Do you like Carr as well?
I do like Carr, but if I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably lean towards Bridgewater by a hair. But I completely agree with what Tim's saying about Derek Carr. I think both of these quarterbacks are two young guys who are not the big names that Russell Wilson and Luck are, but I think they are going to be very good for their team, especially Derek Carr in Oakland, that they've needed this guy for a long time. I think Carr will develop more quickly than Bridgewater, but I think Bridgewater and both of them are going to be very good quarterbacks that have a long tenure in the NFL.
Yeah, I'd rather have Bridgewater because I think he would fit better in Chip Kelly's system, but I honestly don't know that. If Carr is truly a better decision maker and has the better arm, he might be better. I will see with time. Exactly. They're so young. It's going to be exciting to see these guys' careers. It's so cool to see young guys who already we know this kid's probably going to play for at least 10 years, and now we just get to sit back and watch how well they do. So looking at the stats here, yeah, Bridgewater, 10 for 14, 89 yards, nice touchdown. I mean, he's looking good. Obviously, Peterson is not running yet. I'm excited to see when that happens because obviously nothing is going to help Bridgewater's game better than all day back there killing it and making people, all the linebackers, scared out of their mind. The play action is going to open up, and I think he's going to be in really good shape. We got a couple more games here left. Indy versus Chicago. How did that game look to you, Tim?
Chicago, with their starters, they looked better than Indy starters, that's for sure. Indianapolis's offensive line was horrendous. And I mean, I feel like the Bears defense like isn't that good. And it looked like Indianapolis was matching up against like the 85 Bears because Andrew Luck was constantly under pressure. He had a decent stat line. I think he was like, you know, 5 of 9 or something like that, which is a little less than what Luck usually is. But, you know, I'll forgive because T.Y. Hilton had, you know, a horrendous drop. And so did Andre Johnson. Hilton made up for it on the next play with like a 35-yard pass. So, you know, it's weird to tell. And, you know, it's preseason. So, you know, we didn't get a whole lot of time with the starters. Jay Cutler looked good. He looked like, you know, he's doing a little bit better job keeping his head on his shoulders. I didn't see him get, you know, blatantly upset or put his hands on his hips in like the half sorority pose, you know, like he's known to do whenever there's an incompletion or a drop. He looked a little bit more patient. Matt Forte looked good as usual. Jacquizz Rodgers, former Falcon, is the backup running back in Chicago now, and he didn't look fantastic. But then again, you know, I mean, he's the backup for a reason, and there's a reason Atlanta let him go when they don't have any established running back. So, I mean, it's early, but, you know, we did have a couple things written up, from our super fans. The Bears fan, Chicago Tom, you know, he's happy with how the Bears looked in general, but he's interested in the safety position opposite Antrel Roll because they started the rookie Adrian Amos from Penn State over Brock Vereen. And he says that he didn't see that he did anything that would warrant him losing the job. But do keep in mind that the veteran Ryan Mundy was not in uniform, likely a minor injury. You know, interested in the outside linebacker position between Jared Allen and Lamar Houston, said that neither of them really made any impressions on him. And to look into Sam Echo as he continued to perform the best of, you know, all of those people. And the right tackle position, you know, was up and down for, you know, everybody that's going there. And apparently that's a big point of need. Dan from the Colts, you know, said, like I touched on, that the offensive line looked worse than awful is his quote. And I won't even dive into, you know, specifically what it was. You know, he's happy that the defense held Chicago to field goals, and, you know, he liked the way that the defensive line played. So, you know, I mean, it's early in the preseason, and we didn't get to see a whole lot of starters. So I feel like both of these teams are going to be fine. I feel like the Colts are still going to win their division, even if they, you know, had a somewhat disappointing showing against the Bears, just because, you know, Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton and everybody didn't play a whole lot. Andre Johnson did get a 2-point conversion, and that's something I've noticed this weekend. You know, compared to last weekend, there's been a lot more teams going for the 2-point conversion. And, you know, I kind of like that. The Falcons, I don't think they've gone for one at all. But then again, when you have a kicker like Matt Bryant, he's automatic under 50 yards. So just take the 1 point and go with it. But, you know, I felt like that's been pretty interesting. And I saw, you know, the Steelers went for it a couple times, and I think the Eagles did as well. So there's been a lot more of the 2-point conversion, you know, attempts. And, you know, that'll definitely make it a little bit more exciting.
For sure. No, I think that you're dead on with those 2-point conversions. What people aren't realizing, all these coaches are acting like, and even Chip Kelly I've heard quoted saying, yeah, you know, unless they move it closer and it's not from 2 yards out, but a yard and a half or a yard out when you attempt the 2-point, until the league does that, people aren't going to go for two more. But I think that's a very naive stance because, yes, they will. As soon as you miss an extra point, you're going to go for two the next time you score a touchdown, right? Or else you're going to fall behind. And then even more so, if you miss an extra point, like if it was Madden and you miss an extra point against me, if I drive on that next drive and get a touchdown, I'm going for two because all of a sudden I have a chance to go up by 9. And if you go up by 9 all of a sudden, you're now 2 scores up on somebody. That is a huge advantage. And so I think we're going to see a lot of people going for two by the end of this year. And it's going to be – we're going to see some of the weirdest scores we've seen in years. I'm really excited. This makes me excited. I was making the joke on Slack about Tebow, as I call him now. If we could, like, make Tebow a 2-point conversion, like, master, and he could become Tebow, and that's all he does is get us 2 points every touchdown, that would be awesome. Because, yeah, I do that in Madden. When you start scoring on people and you can start putting up twos – you can really, it's very demoralizing when you are all of a sudden realize not only do I have to score to catch up, but I have to start making two to even keep in this game. So, yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think we're going to see a lot more, and I think the fact that we're seeing more in preseason is indicative of that. We are heading that direction. Jimmy, what did you think of the Texan-Broncos game? I know you didn't get a chance to watch much of this game, but, yeah, what did you think?
Real quick on the previous game, do you think Chicago's offense, I'm familiar with John Fox, obviously, do you think their offense will be more so like Carolina John Fox, Denver, or Denver John Fox?
Yeah. What's the difference to you? Tell us what you mean by that, Jimmy. What is the difference you saw in Carolina and then when he went to Denver?
I mean, obviously, Peyton Manning is the biggest difference, but I'm sitting here listening to you guys, and the reason I asked this, Jay Cutler reminds me, he reminds me of a rich man, Jake Delhomme. And he's going to turn the ball off. Both of them had a little gunslinger add to them. But when Jake Delhomme was at his best, he didn't turn the ball over. He didn't win the game for you, but he made some plays, and they relied on the run game and the defense. And John Fox, when he went to Denver, I feel like it was nothing but offense, relying on Peyton Manning to construct whatever the heck he wanted to do. But John Fox has always been conservative Fox. I'm just sitting here looking at Jay Cutler. People give him such a bad rap, but if John Fox, I think if he can tone him back from that gunslinger mentality and just manage him and have him manage a game, I think he could be a rich man's Jay Delhomme.
Oh, that's fascinating. You bring up a really interesting question, right? Because I agree. I think that now that you've described it, I think that was the difference. But I think in both cases, John Fox had an awesome defense. And the difference was that his offense, he had to play the game manager style with DeLome because that's all DeLome could do. And when he got to Peyton, he could just open it up, right? Because he had Peyton and he was just be able to do both sides of the coin. He had a really prolific offense and his defense was still very physical, press coverage, very smothering. But that brings up an awesome question with Jay Cutler because, yeah, Jay is not the guy that you want to – he thinks of himself as Peyton, but you're exactly right. He's probably only as capable as DeLome. But I think it could be challenging to convince Cutler to play like an Alex Smith or even, you know, something more like that, the game manager types. I think it might be a challenge. But you're right. If he can convince Jay to do that, that might be his best chance. From what I've heard, though, the defense, it's interesting. I think this might be the weakest of those three defenses. I think the Panthers defense he had was always very strong. He fielded a good unit. I think he had a lot of really strong pieces the last couple of years in Denver. And now, from what I've heard, it seems that Chicago's defense is nowhere near what it used to be. And I'm not talking about the 85. I'm talking about when Urlacher was there. You know, like they've, since Urlacher's departure, really, I don't know if they've gotten ever a strong defensive unit together. To move on to San Diego, Arizona. This was a fascinating game to watch. Similarly to the Seattle-Kansas City game, it was a game where there was a lot of defense to begin with. And it was looking like these two defensive juggernauts that were slowing each other down and stopping each other. And as I was watching Palmer, he had this really bad throw on the first drive with a bad communication with the receiver. It's preseason. You don't know whose fault it is. If I had to bet, it's the receiver. He should have done something. He didn't. And then Palmer started taking hits. And he, like, took one big hit, and he gets up and he takes another. And I just started to question, can Palmer last the season? He was all of a sudden in, like, a third and 20 or something. Like, really, he'd been sacked twice in a row, and he's just way back. And then he unleashes this really deep pass and nails a bomb, gets right back up, boom, throws a post, gets back up, throws another post for a touchdown, and in three passes, old man Palmer, like, took them straight down the field and scored. And it gave me faith. I still question, can Palmer stay healthy for the whole season? Obviously, that was their main problem last year. But when he plays, man, he looks good. His touch is great. He still obviously has his big size and stature. He can throw the ball over the line with ease. He still has some great receivers there. It was interesting. Like I said, I went from really questioning Palmer to all of a sudden he flipped around. He went right down and scored. But as soon as he scored, Arizona took him out of the game and he was done. On the other side, San Diego struggled more. Number 53 had a nice interception once Palmer was out. They were doing just a lot of three and outs. They just really didn't seem like San Diego could get anything going on offense. And you guys may know this better than me. I don't know that team. I was sitting there going, who is the offensive weapon? Where is the ball supposed to go? And it didn't seem that Phillip Rivers had many options. And that may have just been, you know, the situation they were in for this game. I'm not sure. They were also having some trouble with the center exchange on the snap. And two plays in a row, they had a weird bobble with the center, which obviously something else I wouldn't want to see. They had a great pass breakup by 24. I believe his name is McGee. Had an amazing pass breakup to hold Palmer to a field goal on one of his first drives. So, yeah, 43, Oliver, he was punching it in for a nice touchdown. He looked pretty good as well for San Diego. Tough little runner. He was scrappy. Not something I would say they could carry their offense, but he was. If there was a bright spot on the offense, it was Oliver. Any thoughts, guys, on the San Diego-Arizona game or where these teams are headed?
Two quick things with Arizona. They signed Chris Johnson to give some depth, and then he goes out with a hamstring, out 2 weeks. I thought that was kind of comical. And then another minor thing with Arizona, I think it's interesting that quarterback Phillip Sims got more reps than Logan Thomas.
Interesting. Yeah, totally. That is very interesting. Also, I should mention Arizona missed a extra point attempt. They tried to kick in something. I think even with that snap again, it didn't even get up in the air or whatever went wrong. So
it
it's once again,
they went into the holder's face.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, like he turned to like talk to the kicker and then like turned back and it hit him in the face.
Nice,
always
nice.
My favorite play in football, no matter if it happens to the Falcons, I'm still going to cackle because it's incredible. How does that happen in the pros? Like, it makes no sense. My nephew was 8 years old. And they haven't done that. So how do pros do that? Like, oh, it's so stupid.
The center is looking through his legs. Exactly. Like, the center is looking. I don't understand. It happens way more often than it should. But, I mean, man, when it happens in the Super Bowl to Peyton Manning, obviously it can happen to anybody. Jesus. But incredible. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. You miss a field goal like that, and all of a sudden you only have 6 points. You know, the next team is going to be looking to go for two. Green Bay, Pittsburgh, so sad. Like, we started off this episode talking about Green Bay, it's looking like it's going to lose Jordy Nelson for the season on an ACL. He's having an MRI tomorrow. They probably already know. It just hasn't been announced. Pouncey, broken ankle, is out 6 weeks or so. Two major blows. I think these are both juggernaut teams. They're great teams in both conferences. What do you guys think? Does this really hurt these two teams' chances? I'd love to hear thoughts. What do you think, Tim, to start? I'll get to Jimmy as well.
Yeah, for the Packers, I understand that you're losing 100 catches, but I don't think it's that big of a deal, to be completely honest. Green Bay's wide receiver depth is good. Devontae Adams is their now number two. I want to say kid from Louisville from a couple years ago. I mean, he's good. I feel like he's just going to be the quote next man up, and just figure it out. I mean, Aaron Rodgers isn't going to panic. Eddie Lacy still looks great, and I mean, he was even torching the Steelers defense a couple times today. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. And for the Steelers losing Pouncey, I want to say this is like the second or third time that he's gone out with an extended injury, and they've still been okay. Now, what'll be interesting to see is if this time Pouncey comes back and still makes the Pro Bowl after missing half the year, because I think he did that last time. But I mean, realistically, like, both of these teams I think are going to be okay. Yes, they're losing top 10 players at each position. For Pouncey, I'd probably say that he's top three. Sorry, Jordy Nelson, no disrespect. It's just wide receiver is very cluttered. But I mean, it's just one of the things where I feel like they're going to be okay. And that's what the good teams traditionally are. They're okay, when they lose a major injury.
Yeah. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, I agree. I think the Pouncey injury hurt is more significant between these two teams. Big Ben's always had an issue being protected. And I think that just is going to continue as the season progresses, whether Big Ben can stay healthy, his line can keep him upright. Losing Jordy Nelson is a big deal to Green Bay, but like you said, Tim, they got Cobb, Jeff Janis, Devontae Adams, and Ty Montgomery. They just seem to produce guys year after year. The year they won the Super Bowl, they had so many injuries, if I recall. Charles Woodson goes out early in the Super Bowl. These two teams specifically, they just find ways to keep producing studs within their system, and I don't think they'll miss a beat. They'll miss both players, but it will be interesting to see if Cobb can handle the number one role. I know he benefited a lot with Jordy on the other side, but I do think both teams will be fine despite losing these two big players.
If you can catch the ball at all, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to get you the ball. So, yeah, they just got to get some guys who can actually catch it in just a little bit of separation. That's all they're going to need, and they'll be fine. But that is a blow, Jordy Nelson. That move he makes, I just think of it as like the Jordy Nelson move now. He's running up. He gets just past the corner. They throw the ball. He catches it. The safety's coming over, and he just takes one step in. The safety goes right out of bounds, and Jordy just runs for a touchdown. I've seen that play. I mean, it's like it's a staple on SportsCenter, and not to have that kind of a big breaking playmaker out on the outside is going to be tough. We had a couple games that happened right when we were doing this recording. The one I was watching is the San Francisco-Dallas game. Obviously, I'm interested because of Dallas. The thing I found most fascinating about that game is that they had Romo in only for one series. He went three and out, two runs, and one throw to the backfield flat that went for -1 yards, and then Romo was done for the day. So I don't know. I reached out to Brian on Slack to ask what that was all about, and Brian said the big thing is they don't have two of their offensive linemen in, starters, Martin and Tyrone. So but they didn't have two of their offensive linemen in, and so they were, they were just not wanting to risk him. They also made a crack about San Francisco's field, maybe being too nasty for them to risk injury. But I think that's very interesting. Like I was pointing out earlier, for players who are not playing much in this preseason, for Romo to only go in and hand the ball off twice and throw one pass, I don't know what that is. That I really think Romo needs more practice than that, and it makes me happy to see that they're not even willing to get him out there in practice right now. I don't know how long these offensive linemen will be out. We'll see when they're back. Whedon came in and looked fine. I thought Whedon looked all right. He did throw one pick for a pick six. But, you know, he was, you know, once again, once you get to backups, who knows what's going on. It was looking all right. On San Francisco's side, I mean, you're expecting a dumpster fire, right? I mean, everyone thinks SF has had the worst offseason of all time. They didn't look bad at all. Dallas is missing two of their amazing offensive linemen that everyone think are the best thing since Wonder Bread. But Bowman, in the first three plays, Bowman made three plays in a row. They went three and out. He stopped two run plays. And then they made the pitch out, and he was able to go over and get the running back before he even got to the line of scrimmage. So Bowman is definitely back. They may have lost a bunch of other dudes on that defense, but Bowman is there, and Bowman's playing as badass as ever. The other thing that was really nice to see for San Fran is they had this kid, Hain, number 38, returning punts. If you guys get a chance, bring up the highlight. His first punt return is crazy. They really overkick him, and so he's running, and he catches the punt, full arms extended behind him. Like, when you're running and, like, it's a long ball, his arms are fully out in front of him, and the ball comes over his head, and he catches it, and then turns around and has an amazing return. He then goes on. His next two punt returns are both about 20, 30 yarders, which is very impressive for a kid who's just returning punts. From what I understand, he's from Australia. He's probably some kind of a rugby player or an Australian League football player. Trying to make a run in the NFL, and I wish him the best of luck. He looked really, really good. The other thing that was really interesting to watch with San Fran, and that I also love to see because Dallas had no answer for it, is San Fran's running the up-tempo offense. It was very similar to watching what the Eagles are running right now. As soon as they were getting the ball on the ground, they were up and running it again. Dallas was tired within the first drive and was not able to handle it whatsoever. And Cap was running a weaker version of Chip Kelly's offense, but it was giving the Dallas fits. Made me feel really nice. Yeah. Any thoughts on this game, guys? San Fran and Dallas. You guys get a chance to see any of this?
Yeah, I'll chime in a little bit on Jared Hain, their punt returner, also running back. Yeah, he's like the best rugby player in the world right now, and like retired from rugby to try the NFL. And realistically, he's filthy. And you know, if we didn't have Devin Hester returning punts, if San Francisco cut him, I'd be willing to take a flyer. I'm not even kidding here. You know, he runs a little, you know, upright for my liking, but I mean, if he could learn to tuck his shoulder, he would be filthy. And you know, I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen him do a stiff arm. I mean, go look up his rugby highlights. He deserves a place in the NFL because trust me, he is not one of the softer people. And, you know, to touch a little bit on, you know, the field conditions, you know, Brian, our Cowboys superfan, did state that one of the reasons that he felt that Romo wasn't playing a significant amount of time was because the field was so torn up. Yeah, the field's torn up because of a Taylor Swift concert the other night. If T. Sweezy can be out on the field, then Tony Romo can be out on the damn field. All right? You're a grown-ass man. All right? Don't tell me that Taylor Swift ruined the field too much for you to go out there and throw the ball. All right, grow a pair, get out there, Romo.
It makes me happy. I like to see my opponent scared. So I totally agree. Taste way all the way, down with Romo. With St. Louis and Tennessee, Jimmy, did you get a chance to see this game at all? What did you think of that game?
Mario looks like a rookie quarterback. He's making some reads, making some throws, but he's missing some obvious reads that I think we'll just develop time. And Mettenberger came in and made some. And I noticed particularly he was targeting Dorial Green Beckham a lot. I don't think he had a lot of experience on the practice squad, but they were connecting and making some plays. And oddly enough, I still can't believe Charlie Whitehurst is in the league. He's playing right now, but he's still in the league. I thought he was long gone, but I never liked Nick Foles. I wasn't impressed the way he played today. Case Keenum, right, like a gunslinger, like he's from Houston. He just landed a long pass with Chris Givens for 80 yards. I think Nick Foles is an 8-8 quarterback with Jeff Fisher. Case Keenum might be able to give him a little bright sunshine here and there, but both teams, I think, Tennessee with the quarterback, and I think St. Louis is still missing that quarterback.
Yeah, I saw an article on Deadspin a little bit before we came on that was posted up today, being Sunday when we record this. And it's a video of Chris Carter and Warren Sapp from last year's rookie symposium giving the incoming rookies like a lecture on how to handle themselves as a business entity. And the biggest point that Chris Carter had, and he called Teddy Bridgewater up to stand on stage with him, and he was like, Teddy, you're your own personal brand. So, you know, if you're going out with your crew, make sure that you know and everyone in the crew knows that the money for the entire crew and the funding of the crew is coming from you. So nothing bad can ever happen to you. And make sure that everybody in the crew knows who the one fall guy is and make sure that you have a fall guy. And when I heard this, like, I'm sitting there and I look at my girlfriend and she's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, that was my first reaction, that this is what the NFL is putting in front of the rookies. Not, hey guys, don't do anything stupid. If you're drinking, you know, get an Uber, get a cab. You know, there's all kinds of ways to avoid a DUI. You know, ask a friend to come pick you up. You're an NFL athlete. It's really easy for you to get a friend. If I'm out at a bar and Matt Ryan's like, hey, Tim, I'm a little toasted, will you give me a ride home? I'm like, hell yeah, Matt Ryan, hop in the Kia. We're going to record a podcast on the way home, but I'll totally get you there safely. And then I have drunk Matt Ryan on the podcast. Like, that sounds like it would be dope. But for real, like, you're going to have Chris Carter and Warren Sapp, who are both, I want to say they're both in the NFL Hall of Fame, telling players that are coming into the league to find somebody to blame something on. Like, what would have happened if Ben Roethlisberger would have heard this? Like, when he had his alleged sexual assault, like, what would have happened with Adrian Peterson? He's like, nah, I didn't hit my kid. Frank hit my kid. Man, Frank, you're such an ass. Quit hitting my little kid. Like, are you serious right now? Like, this is what we're teaching them? Not like, hey, don't blow all your money on this sort of thing and that sort of thing. Just make sure that you have a friend who's kind of shady and looks like he would do some stupid stuff. It just blows my mind that this is what the NFL is putting in front of people. If that was my job training, like, I think I would leave that job. But then again, I'm not working for the NFL, so I don't know. You know, and I mean, I guess this is another thing that I rant on. Apparently, I rant on every one of these episodes. I didn't know this before. But
no, it's good.
I'm mad good, at too. Chris Carter. And why is Warden Sapp on stage with that? Didn't he, like, stomp on his girlfriend and bite her? And he's got, like, didn't he, like, solicit a prostitute? Like, who are you throwing stones in your glass house, bro? Like, you know, maybe
I think
he was
Warren
the fall
Sapp
guy for Chris Carter all this time.
I think Warren Sapp is what I will. If it was Bridgewater, it was a year ago, right? So what I'm guessing is the Warren Sapp, his whole prostitution thing that got him out of the NFL was after that. Because, yeah, he definitely, I'm sure they are not going to have Warren at this point talking to any rookies. Because I think the NFL's pretty much turned their back on Warren. I mean, he's not on NFL channel anymore or any of that stuff ever since that prostitution situation. But Chris Carter, yeah, that really surprises me. Because Chris knows about trouble, man. Chris's career almost ended because of him doing stupid stuff. So it makes sense. He's the perfect person to come and talk to them about doing the right thing. But finding the right fall guy, that's ridiculous. And it makes you realize when you look at things like, from my perspective, Michael Vick, somebody Tim, you and I both know. I mean, Vick clearly had a fall guy as that happened. There were people in his family that took hard falls with him, and they were trying to dump as much of the blame off of Vick as they could. So I knew guys do this kind of thing. I just didn't know the NFL would advise it. That just blows me away. I totally agree with you, Tim. But yeah, man, crazy. The NFL, more and more, it's a dirty league. Dirty Goodell. We're going to see what happens with the Brady hearing, obviously, soon, these Brady decisions. This league, man, they do some shady things here and there. That should do it, guys, for the show today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys being here to talk through all these games with us. We are Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. We have another show coming up for you on Thursday where we will be previewing all of the Week 3 preseason games, which are really the most important games, right? We're going to see the most of our starters. It's the last chance, really, for most of the starters to get some warm-ups before the first week of the season. It should be a great show hosted by Pod Vader. Please join us for that. If you want to follow us, you can find us at Next Fan Up. At NFU Podcast on Twitter. If you search Next Fan Up on Facebook, you'll find our Facebook page. Please follow us. We put all of our write-ups before and after each game on Facebook. So you can follow us and have nice things in your feed about each of your favorite teams. Please write to us. We would love to hear from you on Twitter. We are always looking for fans who have opinions about their teams to tell us what they are so we can share them online. We are off for today. Thank you guys so much. Sweet,
I thought that there was like a sign-off drop, so I was waiting for the sign-off drop.